Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. Always a good morning when you start off and the first words out of Ray's mouth are, yeah, this music, I need a drink.
Yeah, that's some good bumper music.
Cocktail time,
everybody.
We got
a party going on here.
Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. Very nice to have you with us. It's a delight as always. We are going to get to a whole raft of topics today, and we look forward to having you be part of our conversation. To do that, all you have to do is write to us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and we will get to your letter in just a little bit. Let me introduce our panel to you. Joining us for the discussion, newsman Ray Graff is in the house. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning.
And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain and University at Albany. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here.
I like the promotion.
Yes. Who?
it's a lateral move, really.
Right. No.
No offense, Rosemary.
None taken.
The mechanics of this were, we found out that Alan was going to be away today, and then as Mike was leaving, and by the way, you jaunt when you leave here.
Well, I was on my way to
No, we know. It's sort of like the Munsters thing where the car
they run out. Yeah,
anyway. Can't get out of here fast enough.
He
anyway,
came back.
So I had Rosemary tackle him in the parking lot, and she got him. So
he stood in front of the car, just held my arms up.
It's Central Avenue. You see a lot of that.
Oh, Mike.
Oh, really?
Very nice. Oh, good.
I think, you know, driving along Central Avenue just proves that, you know, crosswalks and red lights mean nothing.
Nothing.
They're
no,
guidelines.
they're just suggestions.
Suggestions,
yeah.
Exactly.
Optional.
So University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us as well.
I hadn't been introduced yet. Oh, now I can talk.
Now you can talk. Well,
feel free.
You can always talk. We welcome all of you, and thank you very much for being with us. So, all right, let's start with Ebola, because what else is there to talk about?
It's all Ebola all the time if you watch TV.
That's right. Do you think that's incorrect? Do you think that's incorrect?
As we speak, it's on CNN.
Oh, it's spread to a bridal shop, according to CNN. Mm. Yeah. Okay.
But we're safe in New York.
Well, it's concerns about a bridal shop because the nurse from Texas had gone home to Cleveland to get ready for her wedding. Yeah. And they visited the bridal shop. So, I mean, that's the fear that everybody has. I passed her in the hallway. Therefore, I better get tested.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
There's a certain amount of hysteria.
And what about the guy on the cruise ship?
I haven't heard that one.
Oh, well, I mean, the anecdotes. Yesterday, there was a story on the Associated Press that said there's been like 133 people who have come to emergency rooms in New York City with what they think is Ebola, and then they counsel them and test them and said, you haven't been here, you haven't been there, how did you get, and then they go home and find out they just have
it's
a cold.
It's just like with anthrax. With anybody who had been near flour or baking soda thought it was
anthrax,
the white powder of death.
But nobody died of anthrax, right?
That's a good question. I think
I don't remember now.
You know, the cycle of hysteria, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? The information that we're getting, not always accurate from federal authorities, or is it the lack of information? What's feeding the hysteria here? Because the hysteria is building. Should we get more information from the feds or less information from the feds?
This is a classic case of mixed signals.
That's a great question.
Look at the governor today who says, our hospitals in New York are ready. Not that I ever expect that Ebola will come here, although I'm not surprised if it does.
I led the newscast with it.
Yeah.
And because rightfully so.
Oh, it's an important story, and I think it's appropriate for public officials to be more open. We had an incident yesterday where one of our reporters saw a document at the Schenectady Police Department that said a woman had gone into a public health clinic. It turned out she had been in Ghana, but she maybe there was a language problem or something, and she had indicated she had been in West Africa, and she had some mild flu-like symptoms, and there was confusion. And they had contacted, the state health department. The state health department basically just answered by saying, there are no cases of Ebola in New York State. They wouldn't go on beyond that.
Yeah.
And finally, a official got back to us and said, you know, we've checked this all out. She was in Ghana, and there's no risk here. There's no cases of Ebola in Ghana, and we regard this as zero risk. But it was very difficult to get information, and I think it's important, underscores why you have to be open. You have to say what you know and say what you don't know.
And I guess my question was poorly phrased, but at what point does giving information become too much information and thus feeding unrealistic level of hysteria?
That's a great question.
It
Rick.
Really is.
I was thinking about this because the there was a story that came out, I guess it was on CNN last night, about the they said 45 of the healthcare workers that cared for the patient who died in Texas were now being tested. Mm-hmm. And my alarm bells immediately went off going, well, why didn't you do that? Like, you would have thought you would have done that like a week ago. And now maybe they did. But the fact that the information did not come out until yesterday, I found to be really concerning. By the same token, then turn it around and say, on the day after he passes, they say, we are testing all 45 workers. Does that then raise the hysteria? And I don't know. I don't know what the right thing is there.
You've got to put it in context. I think people need to understand what regular medical procedures are when you have infectious diseases so that there's not a shock when you hear, what, they're testing 45 people? Oh, my goodness. Well, as we would with any infectious disease death, we are checking all the people who had contact with the person. Yeah. And that's a reasonable medical precaution. And you know, we have to learn a lot about it. So maybe that justifies the intense media attention until people kind of get comfortable with it.
I don't think it's that the news is on so much that makes the difference, that makes people feel hysterical. It's that it's all speculative because there is a dearth of information from the people who knew. This hospital has clamped down. The CDC has clamped down. Everyone's clamping down because they want to control the message coming out. And the result is the opposite, is that you've got TV hosts speculating.
Or radio roundtable chatter.
You nailed it right there, though, because a lack of information means that people will stop trusting and they'll start speculating and you'll get wild speculation. I was flipping the dial around and I heard a fairly conservative right-wing radio station where people were referring to the president as President Ebola, you know, and they're trying to, you know.
Very
clever. I mean, it's gotten nasty politically. You know, there's increasing calls now for travel bans and, you know, and that becomes a big debate.
Although, look at the president is saying we may need an Ebola czar. That's not calming my hysteria.
No, it's not.
We don't have leadership now. If flu is so dangerous, you know, the whole New York Times article, really worry about the thing that can kill you and you can do something. Why don't we have a flu czar? We have an Ebola czar. So who's causing the sensationalism? Really?
Well, that's the question.
I think Tom Frieden, the Center for Disease Control guy, seems to be the face, you know, the czar. He seems to be leading. He seems to be the guy that is before the spotlight more often. I mean, that's kind of the face of authority. But it makes me worry. I mean, the one comparison that eggs me is when we were told everything was fine in our response to Katrina during, you know, Bush's presidency.
Nice job.
And they really weren't. And you know, he was trying to stand behind his people. But when you start attacking, I mean, it's a dynamic. When you start attacking somebody for their handling of a issue, when you start questioning it in a vitriolic way, and it's appropriate to question it, don't get me wrong, but it makes people be defensive rather than fix the mistakes. And that's a problem.
I just wonder, and I apologize if I'm going out on a limb here, but from my understanding, the healthcare worker who flew to Cleveland to get the dress fitting, right? So she called the CD. Am I right on this? She called the CD.
Someone said that to us yesterday.
They called the CDC and said, can I get on the plane? And they said, okay.
That's allegedly the report that came down yesterday. It was widely reported in national media.
All I know, and here again, this is just my question, is that my dog has been sick. Okay.
Right.
I called the vet and I said, my dog is sick. And they said, does he have a fever? And I said, I don't know. And they told me how to take the temperature and I decided not to do that.
Yeah, well, it's good. And thanks for not going into any more detail, by the way.
And I said, you know, so I think he does have a fever, but I'm not sure. And anyway, they said, look, we don't want to take any chances. Get the dog in the emergency room right away. You call up we call up with a sore throat and say, well, is it okay? Do I need to, can I just, no, go right to the doctor.
Yeah, but you haven't been treating Ebola patients, neither has your dog, I hope.
No, but they're telling me to go to the emergency room.
For a simple case like this, they're urging caution. Why didn't they do it in the case with a person known to be exposed to the virus?
That's my question.
She calls up and she goes, well, you know, and what's unusual is that she had a slightly elevated temperature.
Yeah.
I have to say, if I had 99.5, I would think nothing of it. It's just a range. But did she report that or not? That's in dispute.
In dispute. She did have a temperature which was under 100 degrees,
yes.
And it's 100.4, which is the threshold. And somebody did, a non-named individual from CDC, who was not authorized to speak, did say to the New York Times, this one's on us. You know, even regardless of the details of what went back and forth, she asked us, she told us she was feeling ill, and we said,
you're probably okay.
You're probably okay.
Did you all see E.T.?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Did he have a temperature?
Yeah, he did.
That's right.
And how they
he
took
had to get
it.
Home.
Okay, you
yeah.
know. All right, stop right there.
Stop.
Stop right there.
Anyway, it was my favorite scene in the film.
Okay,
but
you know.
but all the government agencies come, they come and they put the big balloon over the house. And they put it all into, well, sort of, that is my
and
feeling.
And the daisy died, I remember.
This is sort of my feeling as to what you, in your mind, in your science fiction mind, think would happen if you called up and said, I think I have Ebola because I treated this patient who passed away and I have an elevated fever.
Yeah. Should I fly?
Like you think that sort of would be the reaction versus, you're fine.
Well,
go ahead.
I mean, let us not forget, this is the same place where a man who says, I'm Liberian, I'm really sick.
Just got
he's
here
vomiting.
From Liberia.
Yeah, I have a temperature. And they go, oh, yeah, take an aspirin. Come see us tomorrow.
So let me ask one more question, then we'll take a break, which is what we are doing right now, is that hysteria?
That's the question.
Or is this just questioning what is going on and procedure and wondering how one
it's
thing
that.
Goes
it.
Into
you have
it's
it.
That.
You have
however,
it.
We need to be careful that we don't slip into just, you know, sarcastic condescending criticism and you know, it has to be productive. And I think it has already, you know, politicians are, you know, pointing fingers. It's slipping into, you know, just a crisis kind of a situation.
But is it okay? But it's okay to question. I mean,
Absolutely.
You made this statement, a question
Absolutely.
Of like, well, how did this happen? And just because I don't understand, this is why I love the New York Times article this morning, because it has this calendar and saying, okay, here are the three people that we're talking about. This is where they went. This is when they developed the symptoms. This is when their test went in. This is when it was confirmed. And now I sort of have like this picture as to what's going on, and I can sort of I know much more. But it's really difficult to be able to figure that all out.
Do we as media, should we have media guilt for blowing through so many minutes of so many shows on this?
No, it's fascinating. This reminds me of when O.J. Simpson is on trial and everybody's saying, oh, we're not writing about elections. Oh, we're not writing about it. And then name any other story that you like that wasn't O.J. It's fascinating. It has many aspects of globalization, of the equality of health care. This is a huge sweeping story that cuts across a lot of society. We should be talking about it.
And is
media
it
behavior?
I'm sorry?
Media behavior is one aspect of the story. Public health
crisis. I agree with you. I mean, it's necessary. To answer your question, right, it is appropriate and necessary to talk about it. Okay. It's a legitimate major issue. And the more, as Joe said, the New York Times does more to illuminate it than anybody by spelling it out step by step in a very, you know, easy to understand way. The more we know, the less fear we'll have.
But is the level of media coverage, including on this program, commensurate with the actual danger?
Well, 10,000 people are sick and 5,000
in Africa,
and 5,000 are killed.
Five here,
but one death.
Okay. Well, sick. How many have it here in this country at this time?
Currently, there are the two nurses from Texas and the cameraman from NBC who is being treated in the U.S. The other two who were missionaries have been released from the hospital.
I mean, Ebola is not new in Africa, and we don't talk about that every day.
We talk about it a lot, though. That's another bad argument, that we didn't talk about it, we didn't care about it. We have always cared about
it. It's always more important when it's close to your house,
well, of
obviously.
Course. And let us not forget, it wasn't ever going to come here. No, that'll never happen. And it did happen.
Yeah.
So, no, I agree with Mike that this is an important story and we ought to be talking about it.
You know, Joe was going to go to a break and we totally blew it.
That's all right. I'm going to still go to a break. I'm going to come back, and then we'll
talk about
for like a minute.
Let's talk about Ebola. We haven't done that.
We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We're going to take a news break. When we come back, we will talk about many other topics, not just Ebola. You can accuse us of hysteria on other topics, okay. not just this one, of course.
Build a bunker. Dig your bunker now.
Ray Graff.
Dry goods.
Rosemary Mayo.
And toilet paper. You need a lot of that.
You're scaring me,
Saltines,
right?
Saltines and tins.
Plus, we'll talk about FBI on the FBI and cell phone data, as well as the fact that soon we'll be able to watch whatever we want on television at our laptop.
Nice.
Anytime, anywhere.
Anywhere. We're gonna have 95 subscriptions in it, and we're gonna
watch the Rifleman
anything
anytime.
Absolutely. We'll continue our conversation. Keep your letters coming. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this break.
I saw you standing alone.
We now return to our regular broadcast.
Good morning. Welcome back to the regular broadcast. I'm Joe Donahue with Ray Graff, Rosemary Armeo.
Way too much fun this morning.
That's all right. It's downhill from here.
And Mike Spain is with us. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about some other issues making news, and we will discuss the story that I'm trying to bring up, and yet I keep on getting another story, which is the FBI and cell phone data, but I keep on getting the Ebola czar story. So hold on, let me bring up the right one here, and we'll be all set. Although, we handled the Ebola czar, right?
Yes.
We
kind of covered
it. Let's not say the word again.
The issue that you have prompted us to study up and talk about is the story about the FBI being concerned that the new iPhones and the new Androids have encryption that will make it difficult, impossible actually, for the National Security Agency to monitor your emails and get into your phone. And most people would think that's a good thing, but from the law enforcement perspective, it's a problem.
The recommendation for increased encryption came from the committee that President Obama put together in the midst of the NSA scandal. And they said, yes, we should go to more encryption. This is a good idea. It will increase security. So it's very interesting to me that we now have the head of the FBI saying, no, we have to, what did he say? Swing back from the pendulum.
The post-Snowden pendulum.
Yeah, that's it.
This is nothing new. If you recall back in the 90s, there was, I think, something, and I hope I have the name right, it was PGP, Pretty Good Privacy.
Right.
And it was encryption for computers. It was only computers then. There weren't really smartphones. And the NSA and the feds and various agencies said, look, this is too much. We need a backdoor into this. And eventually something was worked out, although I'm sure there are encryption methods. But the thing about this was it was out there for anyone to use.
Right.
And this was the same battle, just slightly different technology 20 years ago.
Well, in this case, they can't go to Google or to Apple and say, get us those conversations, get us in. And they design and build this system where they can't get to it. They make it so they can no longer get to it. It's like the new Apple Pay system. The Apple won't have the information.
Yeah.
They're creating something that they're not going to have a key to. So
can I be skeptical for a moment?
Yes.
Yeah. They'll get to it.
Yeah. the problem is that the European countries and Asian countries are requiring that they not have these trapdoors or backdoors into these phones and into these devices. So how can you have, theoretically, I guess you could have a different phone that would sell in the 50 states and another phone. And then people would want to get their hands on European iPhones and
so
things.
So can I just
the
ask a question?
The point is, though, that if you do have the trapdoors that are set up with good intentions for law enforcement or for government officials who have concerns about terrorists, if that door exists, then hackers and bad people
bad
can
guys.
Get into it, which is exactly what happened to the technology you were talking about, which now is worthless.
Yeah.
It does not really encrypt. It slows you down a mite.
Am I naive to ask the question about what about a warrant?
Well, the point is that they could. I'm sorry. The companies could not break the encryption. So I could have a warrant saying, Apple, tell me what this conversation is. Apple can't get to it either. It's encrypted from everybody except for you.
So it's not. It so even okay, but somebody has access to the information.
Only the
owner of the phone
it.
Knows the code.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the level of
so they'd have
here,
to torture the. Oh, that's no problem for us either. Just word of boredom. Well, give me your code. Right.
The level of encryption in these consumer devices, one would have to postulate, follows by the order of several years, that which is already available to military and high-level government, which right. our people are already attempting to, probably successfully, hack for against other countries and other entities. I think this is a relative tempest in a relative teapot.
That's a good point.
It's just incremental, and they'll figure out a way.
Well, they probably already have.
There's some really creepy and scary Orwellian technology out there. There's a company now that is capable of filming, get this, an entire neighborhood, like 25 miles, and to keep this image so that if you wanted to, say, check out a robbery,
right.
you could back up and look at the pictures from 24 hours ago and just follow the little robbers as they go in. Okay, that's great for law enforcement. Do you want that? Do you want that sort of big brother eye seeing and holding all that kinds
of
information?
There's no escaping it, though.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I don't. I hope we do encrypt.
The standard response is, you know, if you're doing nothing wrong, it's okay.
That is exactly
that's
the response.
That's a very bad response.
Yeah, it is.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
So when the director of the FBI says we've gone too far and hinted that as a result that there may be new regulations and laws forcing companies to create a way for the government to unlock. Do we want to give them the key?
No, sir.
Yeah.
They're the people I most want to keep out.
There are some people in Northern Virginia who probably have this figured out in a very secret
well,
room.
What about the brick, the dead phone brick? It's a law in New York State, and other states are adopting it, where you should be able to send a code. Like if you lose your phone, you can send a code from your computer to your phone that will make it, completely just zap any memory in it at all, make it useless and worthless. They can't call it back up and pull it back in or anything like that. It just wipes it clean.
Boy, I wish I had that with relationships.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. Well, all right. Cue the cocktail music. It's time for the floor show.
People, well, the technology is there to hide things, and while it does give a free pass, I guess, to evildoers, so to speak.
Ooh, President Bush.
Yeah.
Yes, evildoers.
America.
These devices have incredible insight into us. They're extensions of our thinking and our talking. All things that were private in the past are now done through devices. So it is Orwellian. They do have access. They, Big Brother, has access to anything of us that they want. Now, I don't like that.
You got to get off the grid.
I mean, you could keep your phone in a certain kind of bag that's like foil, plastic
wear,
foil.
Wear the foil hat as well.
Yeah, and no, I mean, that would keep it from being trackable, and you could turn off all the notifications. I mean, there are...
But then why have it?
Yeah.
That's the value of having a smartphone, is that you're always connected, you're always on the grid, so if the only way to use it and be safe is to get off the grid, what is the point?
Well,
I hate
a guy...
that when people go, I don't want to talk about this on the phone.
Yeah.
You have to see it. I hate that.
Well...
This is not something I want to put into an email. Yeah, and it isn't any kind of conversation. I would, of course, put it on, but
yeah, this is good. Now keep that line of questioning going, Joe.
I'm just listening.
I want to find out about Rosemary's.
Wow,
it probably would be a personnel discussion or
of
something.
Of course, with student grades, that sort of thing.
That kind of thing.
Right.
Let's take a break. We'll be back and discuss more. And we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Miss Hall School, a boarding and day school in the Berkshires for grades 9 through 12 and a postgraduate year. Open house November 11th, What Girls Have in Mind, misshalls.org. And Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs. SteveLewisSubaru.com.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're on. Good morning.
I'll tell you about the...
A little bit.
I've already broken it. Okay. Don't worry about
it's
it.
It's amazing what she's hiding.
Let's get a couple of letters. One from Jeffrey says, here are my concerns and comments regarding Ebola. While we are facing the greatest potential public health situation since the flu epidemic in the early 20th century, we have no Surgeon General. Why is that? The Republicans have blocked the qualified nominee. Two.
What would the Surgeon General do about Ebola? Or about any major health crisis, is that? Would
He'd
it make such a big difference?
He would be the
effort,
as opposed to the head of the CDC. Would it make?
I think it's bad we don't.
I'm sorry. I think it is bad we don't have a Surgeon General or an ambassador.
Well, I think
to
that would be your czar, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it could be someone you'd pick.
Surgeon corporal, at least somebody.
Direct contact means being in the same room. Ebola is carried in droplet of water expelled in breathing, sneezing, coughing, etc. One does not have to contact bodily fluids. Let's just put it that way. One just needs to be close enough for such droplets to reach you. CDC saying that it is not airborne is just euphemism. If one can contract it without real contact, to most folks that means at least somewhat airborne. All right. Thank you. Given all, Constantine writes, given all the lies and spin over the past few days, you should also suspect that the nurse who said she called from the airport did not actually call the CDC unless I missed it. The CDC employee who the nurse said she spoke to has not been identified. It was reported she was attending a family wedding and that and that is important, but she's a trained health professional and should have had enough sense to fly until the period of heightened security had passed. She shares in the blame for raising the level of hysteria.
But, I mean, when one person's, you know, either negligence or mistake can cause this kind of thing, that, you know, it's risky.
Yeah. Well, there was the NBC correspondent who is a doctor, and her cameraman is the one who was affected. So they were on a voluntary. Do you remember this?
Nancy Schneiderman.
Yeah. And she went out to get takeout food. I mean, completely irresponsible as both a doctor and a reporter.
Is that right?
I think. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
They found she was reported. She's kind of apparently not a very nice lady, and her neighbors don't like her, and they see her. So they report her, and it's what had been a voluntary quarantine is now a mandatory quarantine. But ridiculous that it went to that point.
Lock up Nancy. There's a little effort going on.
Yeah.
Nice.
Don writes, unfortunately, Ebola has become a media event in the U.S. Rather than panicking, we should focus on eradicating the source in Africa, where Ebola is really a disaster.
I believe that is going on. Also, you can both talk about it on the media and do basic research. In fact, it's probably not the same people doing both.
Isn't the ADD of the media remarkable? And I include us. ISIS, huge 3 weeks ago. We haven't mentioned
one word. Aren't you still reading about it, though?
We haven't mentioned it.
But we've had big things like the fund drive and stuff to talk about. That doesn't mean we don't care.
Ray,
about
I can
ISIS.
Bring up ISIS like that if you want.
No,
is that a request and dedication?
No, I'm just saying that the American consumer of media and the American purveyor of media, remarkably short attention span.
And who's talked about Ukraine lately?
I have.
Yeah.
Okay. I hate this.
But
I
only
don't
on your
think you have
phone.
To make a choice. It's not like we can talk about Ebola or Ukraine. We can talk about all of it.
I agree with Ray, though. There tends to be a fixation with a big story. And every time you look at any of the 24-hour news stations, they have breaking news. And people are sort of, you know, it's another reason to keep looking and looking at the little trailer underneath. I mean, it's part of the culture now.
People if this show was 2 hours long, we'd hate ourselves by the end of it, you know? Because we're part of the problem, right? Rosemary.
Well, first of all, who says we don't hate ourselves now?
Oh, come on. Well, cut it out. Cut it out.
All right. And then we got this from John in Newburgh. You talk on and on, but have not brought in experts with solid facts and answers.
Wrong.
How are you not adding to the hysteria? And I believe
we brought Alan had an expert on this on Tuesday in Vox Pop for an hour long.
Not to mention all of the programs, both our programs and NPR and BBC programs that have covered this extensively with experts
right.
as well.
But thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ray. Let's go back to topics at hand and see what other trouble we can get into. Hey, Mike, what's making news in the Times Union world?
Well, in addition to covering the Ebola case, we have an interesting story that actually originated from a story in Sports Illustrated about the widespread use of AstroTurf. It isn't really AstroTurf. It's another brand, but I think most people commonly know it as AstroTurf. Fake turf, fake green grass that are on soccer fields and athletic fields. Mm-hmm. And there's actually been some studies that suggest, not conclude, but suggest that there is a link between the ground-up tires that are used to make the underpinning before they put the fake grass on top of it and some incidence of lymphoma. And specifically, soccer goalies who are standing in one place where there's a lot of this ripped up and there's a lot that flies in the air. And, you know, kids in the area talk about it and say that they find these black pellets in their shoes and socks and they make their way into their equipment bag. And it's very common that our kids are playing on it and colleges are having their athletics on it. There continues to be no firm agreement on what is actually happening, but it is now, because of Sports Illustrated's attention to it, it's become a story. And someone
investigating to
try
to make
it. I mean, there's a number of follow-ups to this. NBC News aired it last week, and they said there's just not firm connections, but the investigations are continued. I don't know what public health agencies are looking into it, but it seems to be warranted. There was a case where 34 goalkeepers had been diagnosed with cancer in the state of Washington.
It's a lot.
It's amazing.
And it was noticed where this, one health worker, I don't know if it was a physician or somebody at a hospital, was noting that, boy, that's the fourth or fifth goalie we've had in here in a long time, So they began to look at it.
So far, not conclusive science.
Absolutely not
this.
Conclusive, but enough. And there are concerns around here. We talk to people at Union College. We talk to people at Niskayuna High School, et cetera, and College of St. Rose. They're all watching it. Some people still think it's pretty far-fetched. They're not necessarily believing it. And it may be that there is no connection, but people are looking and the attention is up.
What about playing on grass?
Grass.
Couldn't you do that?
Then you just get concussions.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds awful. Another study. Natural.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of weird. Yeah.
Although between this turf and guardrails, I'm now getting more and more concerned about.
Stay on the couch, eat ice cream, watch TV. Nothing will happen to you. No James Fix running and you die. No guardrails.
Yeah. All right.
More
I like
convinced.
The way you think.
All right, so let's talk about television.
We all talk about it all the time.
That's right.
I love this term, cord cutters. Can you include that in your setup here?
Of course.
Okay.
I can, again, I take requests.
This is the New York Times, right?
It's being used everywhere, though, suddenly.
An article, and we'll do this real quick, because then I certainly want time for Joe Biden's son. A new era of a la carte television, arrived in earnest this week, seemingly all at once and more quickly than many industry executives and television fans had expected. Just one day after HBO said it would start an internet-only offering, CBS announced on Thursday its own subscription streaming service that lets people watch its live programming and thousands of current and past shows on demand. The moves signal a watershed moment for web-delivered television, where viewers have more options to pay only for the networks or programs they want to watch and to decide how, when, and where to watch them. Rapidly fading are the days in which people pay an average of $90 a month for a bundle of networks from a traditional provider. I find
much of which you don't want.
Right. And we had... We've talked on this program about the many efforts within the FCC and the cable operators to have an a la carte menu where you go in and say, all right, I'm going to pay for the services that I want and use. That technology, of course, is available and possible. And the cable industry said, no, we can't do that. Well, now the networks have said, all right, well, forget you. We'll go out. We'll offer our own. You can pay this much. You can pay that much, which is pretty much what now you're – we're up against is that the time that we have to watch television, we can choose where we're going to see it and who we're going to see it from and who we're going to pay for it.
I would like this story a lot more if I thought that the arrogant cable companies who, as you say, ignored their customers' requests were really being hurt by it. But the truth is that I think they've been getting ready for this moment for a long time. They saw it coming. And they are the internet provider in most places.
Yes.
So they're still
going to
end up making tons of money on this.
for
that
home
hurts
internet,
me. Yes. Yeah, for home internet. That hurts me.
This story saddens me.
Why? Because I love channel surfing. And I'll find a station that I've never... I saw a show on Alcatraz on a network the other day called American Heroes Channel. I never knew this existed. And it was a fascinating history of Alcatraz.
It is a compulsive disorder to sit and surf
not.
Channels for hours.
It's intellectually...
relaxing.
It can... Having this a la carte and only picking things that you might like...
I know, there's no serendipity. That's
it doesn't allow you the breadth of finding something new and learning something new.
Can I ask a question?
No, you may not.
All right.
No, go ahead.
Might as well.
Who are
the tall guy in the corner. Go ahead.
Who were the American heroes at Alcatraz?
Fascinating.
Sean Connery is. Can you see the movie?
No. A fascinating program. It goes back to the Civil War.
Okay.
And there were gun abutments there. And then it was a prison in the Civil War and post-Civil War, and Lincoln used it for political prisoners. Fascinating show. Never would have found it had I not channel surfed.
This is similar to the demise of print, where no one ever got a newspaper to read about corruption in City Hall or the way the highway had been constructed and corruption was about. Or bad guardrails. You bought it for the sports page, possibly, or the horoscope. And this was the serendipity. You would get that along with what you really wanted. And now that newspapers, you can customize your newspaper online. You can only get the article that most interest you. You miss a lot, and that's what you're talking about. It's very valid.
I think the other point here is that we've reached, to me, as a consumer, I've already reached the point where you can have Netflix, you can have Amazon Prime, you can have the HBO Go, which is on top of my normal cable bill. At some point you say, okay, enough. I'm paying how many services am I going to pay for? And I think that'll be the interesting thing for people is how much are they willing to pay for? I've got my Netflix, I've got this, I have Hulu.
Cable bills are enormous. I mean, my college students who barely have money for food have enormous entertainment queues in which they get everything you possibly... I don't know how they do their homework. They have so many entertainment options.
Yeah, well, that's a problem.
I think it's one student that pays for it and then they all use that login. I think that's how that works.
Well, that's another question. Will multiple logins be a possibility when this is the brave new world we enter?
I think it's possible already.
Yes.
Sort of like encryption.
We'll figure it out. Absolutely. Raymond, Rosemary, and Michael, have a glorious weekend. Thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure as always, and we'll regroup on Monday.
Splendid.
Coming up, we'll have more Roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.